Our format will consist of a two-minute opening statement from each candidate. After each question, the candidates will have 90 seconds to respond with an optional 30-second rebuttal. As moderator, I may have a follow-up question, and Mr. Parker and Mr. Carroll will have 30 seconds to answer. And if time permits, both Mr. Parker and Mr. Carroll will have a 1 minute each for a closing statement. We flipped a coin, and Mr. Parker won the toss and has elected to let Mr. Carroll go first. So let me start the timer, and your time starts now.
Thank you, Todd. As a matter of introduction, my name is Danny Carroll. I'm a candidate for the 2nd District State Senate. I am a native of Marshall County, a graduate of Murray State University. I'm married. My wife and I have been married for 25 years. We have two children. I am a retiree from the Paducah Police Department, where I served 24 years. I retired as Assistant Chief of Police. For the past 4 years, I've been the President and CEO of Easter Seals West Kentucky. For me, this election is about two things primarily. It's about service to the public. I've spent my entire adult life serving the public in one capacity or another, and not just service, but effective service. And it's a career that I am very proud of. The other part of it is about the challenge. We face a lot of issues in our state, and through investigations as a police officer, the struggles that we've had at Easter Seals, turning around an organization that was about to close some doors to a stable and growing organization at this point. So I thrive on challenges, and I know what we're facing in our state, and having the opportunity to affect the lives of everyone in this state, to take care of our people in our district, to improve the quality of life. That's about as good as it gets as far as being a servant to others. And for me, it's just a big part of who I am and what I do and what completes me as a person. And I am very proud of what I've done in my career. I have experience in government, law, dealing with Medicaid, early childhood education, a lot of leadership training. I was trained at the FBI National Academy. So I feel like my background and my life experiences have very well prepared me for this position. And I feel like the tools and the experience that I can bring to the office, plus the commitment that I've shown throughout my entire career, would be beneficial to the community.
Thank you, Mr. Carroll. Mr. Parker, your 2 minutes starts now.
Hello, my name is Jeff Parker, and I want to thank WKMS and Todd Hatton for having us today. I am a candidate for Kentucky State Senate from the 2nd District. A little bit about myself. I'm a lifelong resident of McCracken County. I am a property owner of both McCracken and Marshall County. I graduated from Reeland High School, attended Paducah Community College. I currently live in Lone Oak. I have 4 grown children. I'm married to Lisa Parker. I have 6 grandchildren and 2 more on the way by Christmas. So we'll have an interesting Christmas. We'll have 8 grandchildren running around under the age of 4. So I worked for United Parcel Service for approximately 24 years, the last 15 as a Teamster truck driver. Enjoyed that career. I left that, went into business for myself. I've been a small business owner for the last 15 years in the cell phone industry and also in the restaurant industry. My family owns a couple of restaurants in Lone Oak there, Parker's Drive-In and City Rockers Pizza. I'm actually serving on the McCracken County Board of Education at this time. I've been on there for 7 years. I'm not a career politician. I've not run for office before except for the Board of Education, and I've never had an opponent, so this is my first quandary into running for an office with an opponent. I love Western Kentucky. I'm very deep rooted there. Growing up in McCracken County, I learned at a young age what faith, family, and hard work was all about. I think that's what my campaign is about. I think that's what my family's about. I've taken the lessons I've learned through those 3 things and have instilled them into raising my children and running my business. So that's what we're all about.
Well, thank you, Mr. Parker. Just to make sure everything is kosher there. Well, Mr. Carroll, I'll give you the first question. The latest unemployment numbers show Kentucky at 7.1%, the lowest it's been since September of 2008. That's a full point above the national average, and it's better than Tennessee's or even California's jobless rate. But the Commonwealth still has the 41st highest unemployment rate in the country, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. What do you think is driving Kentucky's rate down into positive territory, I should say, and what do you propose to do to keep it that way?
Well, I think there has to be a lot of comprehensive changes in our state to 41st is totally unacceptable, and even the small growth that we have had in unemployment and those numbers reducing, which could be due to seasonal employment. You know, there are a lot of factors that could affect that. But the bottom line is, it's just where we are is unacceptable. We do need to make some significant changes in the state. First and foremost, I think we have to address the tax code in our state, and we have to make our state more business friendly to be able to attract business and industry to our state, good paying jobs. I think during the height of the recession, back around 2009, we lost about 100,000 jobs as a state, and we've recovered about 60,000 of those. The problem with that is many of those jobs are lower paying jobs. So that has been a struggle, but to address the unemployment issue, it's just obvious we have to change our entire structure and look at some of the other states like Texas that are thriving at this point and make changes in our tax structure to make it more equitable across the board, where no one particular group is carrying too much of a burden, but make sure that business and industry, that we are supporting them, because I believe that they are the key to pulling us out of the issues that we face at this point. And as we increase business into the state, more jobs is going to create more revenue that will help us to address the other badly needed programs, the funding for those programs in our state.
Mr. Parker, the same question.
Well, absolutely. 41st is very unacceptable, and we need to work in across the state. Kentucky is unique, and Western Kentucky is unique, where it's got a strong middle class, and that's one of the biggest reasons why I ran on the Democratic ticket, because I think that's a strong middle class. We have a lot of professional people. We also have a lot of working people. Now, the drop from 10.7 to 7.1 in the state unemployment rate, I think some of that can be accredited, and I'm not saying I agreed wholeheartedly 100% with our health care reform in the state of Kentucky, but in the last year and a half, we've had 3,600 jobs created through Kentucky Neck and also through Bashir Care in the health care industry. So that lowers it some. There's actually 26,200 people more working last month than they were in 2010 in that month. So it's not all from health care, but health care doesn't hurt. So, you know, the downside on the tax reform on health care, I know we have a long way to go on that, but I think there's a lot of jobs, and that's the part of the health care industry, part of the health care that we haven't looked at, is the jobs that it is creating.
Let me skip ahead a bit then to kind of a follow-up question, not a follow-up question, but another question on that, in that vein. The winner of this race will still be in office in 2016. That's when the 100% federal subsidies for Medicaid expansion under the ACA ends. So if you are that senator and you support the ACA, how would you pay for the state's increased cost after 2016? If you're opposed, how would you propose to end the expansion? And what, if anything, would you replace it with? Mr. Carroll, we'll start with you.
Well, I think at this point it's estimated that by 2021 we could have to absorb $500 million into our general fund budget as a result of Medicaid expansion. And I think there's no question that everyone is in support of medical care in our state. However, if hospitals continue to close, as the case is with the Affordable Care Act, we're going to lose jobs. It's just plain and simple. And it sounds great to want to provide medical care to everyone, to provide health insurance. But the real reality of that is there's a price to be paid. And, you know, we're looking at a $10 billion budget, and then you're looking at a $500 million increase. Look at the significance of that. Where is that money going to come from? What are we going to have to cut from other programs like education, other human source programs? Resources programs, where is that money going to come from? And I feel like that we need to reassess completely the health care and the Medicaid expansion. We've got to have responsible health care in our state, look at ways to reduce the cost of health care, to provide adequate health care for folks, and get our economy moving so people can have better paying jobs so they can afford health care. You know, we've got to look at things like medical review panels to cut down on frivolous lawsuits. caps on non-economic damages in lawsuits and things that will attract doctors to our state and look at the ways to reduce medical costs to make it more affordable for our people.
Mr. Parker.
I think the Affordable Care Act is something that's here, and whoever wins this race will have to deal with it. We'll inherit it. So I'm not sure that I agree 110% with every part of it or every component of it. But like I said in the first question, it has created jobs, and it's an industry by itself. So I think we need to look at part of it or look at it as an economic development also, with it creating 3,600 jobs in the last year. How many will it create by the year of 2016? So maybe some of our economic funds will be switched over to that. It's going to evolve into its own little world, and I'm not sure that any of us know the answer. I know that we can't take away, we've gave 500,000 Kentuckians health care in the last year, with 70,000 of that being children, and I don't think we can take that away from the people we've gave it to. I think we have a moral obligation to keep our word and our bond. So I think we figure out a way to pay for it, and it may be through. We may have to take some lumps on tax issues and cutting in some places we don't really want to cut, but we need to take care of those people, especially the children.
Mr. Carroll, rebuttal?
Well, I think I look at it this way, and our role as government is to create opportunity. And I think we can control what we do in Medicaid in our state. And Medicaid is a very important program. The organization I serve is a Medicaid-based program. And, I have concerns that those fundings won't be there for programs that are already existing. We've got to get our economy stable. We've got to grow our economy to have funds available to work on these programs. We can't spend and spend and spend and then hope we can find the money. We've got to get our economy growing to take care of these issues. We've got to create opportunities for folks, not a dependency on government.
Mr. Parker, response.
I couldn't agree more. I think that, like I said, the whole healthcare industry is evolving into something different than what we know it and what we've known in the past. So in the last year, it's created 3,600 jobs. What is the impact of 3,600 good paying? A lot of those are high paying jobs. What is the tax? What is the tax? And what do we bring in from that? Let's turn it around. It's an industry by itself. Let's make sure that we're gaining in strides and make sure that money is going to help pay for the healthcare costs.
Can we follow up a little more on that?
I wish we could. We could do the entire half hour on healthcare.
Absolutely.
All right. So we'll go on to the next question. State Budget Director Jane Driscoll has reported that general fund receipts went up 1.2% in August. That's the latest month we have numbers for, but that essentially means that revenues would have to post almost 4% growth each month for the rest of this fiscal year in order to meet the state's revenue projections for 2015. What do you think the legislature can do to help Kentucky find that kind of growth? Mr. Carroll.
I think immediately it's addressing our tax codes, and I think that's got to be one of the first issues that's addressed in the new legislature. Until we get businesses in and get higher paying jobs, that's what the struggle is going to be. In our area, the loss of the USEC and probably 500 jobs at least will be lost. Some of them will be gained back from the cleanup, but there will still be around 500 lost. So it's a struggle for our region, and our people in this area have done a good job with economic development, but many of the jobs that we have attracted have been lower paying jobs. So the focus has got to be first and foremost to be able to do all the other things we need to do is to get our economy moving, to get jobs into our state, and we're going to have to make some basic structural changes in the way we operate to get those businesses here, to get the industry here, to get people back to work, to get our proud people doing what they want to do, and that's to work and not having to be dependent on others. And I think that has to be the goal. And I think once we start making moves towards that early on in the session, then I think we'll see some significant changes and we'll start seeing more interest in business and industry coming to our state. We have everything to offer, especially in our area. We've got rail services, we've got highways, we've got river, we've got workforce, we've got education with Murray State, WKCTC. We've got all that we need. It's just getting the final pieces that we need to take care of in Frankfort to build the structure, to build the environment that are going to get that business and industry here to increase our revenue.
Okay, Mr. Parker.
I think that kind of growth only comes in prosperity through jobs, so we have to do whatever we can to manufacture those jobs. We live in a part of the country in western Kentucky, and we have excellent rail service. We have excellent waterways. We're one of the leaders in the river industry where we're at. We have highways. We've got Route 66 coming. We've got I-24. So we have rail, highway, and water services that are second to none. We have several companies in our area that employ hundreds of people. We spend a lot of money in looking for things such as a mega site, mega plants, things like that. We have the Calvert City Complex in Marshall County that is an enormous amount of good paying jobs. I think that what we need to do is concentrate best on what we're good at and make sure that we are helping those people that are already in place produce good paying jobs and fair wages for Western Kentucky people. Also, we have, which I serve on the Board of Education in Cracker County, so I know a little bit more about education than the average person, but we have Marshall County High School, or Marshall County School System's in the top 5 in the state. McCracken County's in the top 12 of the state. Ballard County the other day got listed, their school system's one of the top 5 schools in the state for child welfare. So we've got a very good educational system. We've got a lot to offer in this area, and we just need to put the money to protect what we've got and to add to it and build on it.
I have a follow-up question, Mr. Carroll. What place do you think that tax incentives and right-to-work legislation play in spurring economic growth in Kentucky?
I think incentives are crucial as part of the package. I think you have to look at incentives to attract business here. We need to look at some deregulation in our state. The regulations tie up our business and industry, and a lot of new industry coming in, they don't want to deal with that. So I think that is crucial. So we have to, again, create the environment. And as far as right to work, I've talked to many folks in economic development who feel that when they go out recruiting, one of the first aspects of the state that they look at is, are we a right-to-work state? And we are not right-to-work, so we are automatically marked off the list. So I feel like that's something that needs to be assessed. I'm not against unions. I believe that there is a place for unions in our workforce and the protections they provide. However, I'm worried about jobs for our people, and that's people who are union members and those who aren't union members. And we're at a point where we've got to take steps to get jobs to our state, and we've got to make the environment suitable for that. And I believe that a right-to-work law will help accomplish that, along with deregulation and revised tax code.
Mr. Parker, the same question. I'll give you the same time.
Tax incentives play a huge part. Like I said in the question before, I'm not sure that we always use our tax incentives in the best way. We have the river, the rail, and the highway system. We have the plants in Calvert City. I would like to see us push more in using tax incentives to better what we already have, to go to those plants in Calvert City, to go to the river services, and ask them what we can do to add jobs, those good-paying jobs. I do believe that hard work's what it's all about. That's why I strongly support giving workers a fair living wage. Chad Chancellor, Paducah Economic Development man, just left. Had a long discussion with him before he left. Right to work is not at the top of the reason why we're not getting jobs. It's probably a lot of it we're spending that money in places that, like I said, we need to come back to where we're good at, the river and the plants in Calvert City. We also need to take a look. You said in an earlier comment that we had dropped 3.6% our unemployment rate, better than Indiana, better than Tennessee. Those are right-to-work states. We're not a right-to-work state. We also just built a new high school in McCracken County, and we built it with prevailing wage and union labor, and it come in under budget. So I'm not sold on right-to-work.
Okay. Any rebuttals?
I think it's clear when you, and I'm not saying it is the answer, it's part of a package that is the answer. And the reality of it is, when you look at the statistics, you look at states like Texas that are a right-to-work state, it does make an impact. It is a positive impact. And looking at all the other aspects with the tax codes, deregulation, it is a piece to the puzzle that it's going to bring in more jobs. And another side of that is, I don't believe that anyone, as a requirement of having a job, should be forced to pay union dues in order to have that job. And then one final aspect of that, as far as prevailing wage, when you look at it, for every three schools, I believe it is, that we build under prevailing wage, if we didn't have prevailing wage, we would be able to build a fourth school in this state. And is it fair that taxpayers should have to pay a higher rate of pay than a private citizen for a construction process? And I think that's something that folks have to look at.
Mr. Parker, do you have a rebuttal, Mr. Parker?
Sure.
Okay.
In the state of Kentucky, there's over 300,000 people that belong to unions or professional associations or some type of organization that supports their work. And I have to rebut, we had a professional service look at the building of Newman Cracker County High School. We spent $65 million. The difference of building it with prevailing wage and not prevailing wage would have been up to 5%. That's not, three of those is not going to build you a $65 million school, I'm sorry. You get good labor, you take electricians, pipe fitters, plumbers, people like that. They go through apprenticeships. They pay their dues. They go 3, 4, 5 years. You take teachers, they go through tenure. They take 4 years to top out to get their pay. They've been to school. We have to protect those people. They have a right to be protected. If a person wants to work in a non-union job, then they're more than welcome to work in a non-union job or not belong to association, but that'd be their whatever they need to do.
I might say something about the teachers. It just so happens that under my opponent's leadership with McCracken County School Board that he cut off negotiations with the bargaining unit for the teachers. So I question being so pro-union, pro-labor, why did that happen when he's not even negotiating with his own teachers?
Cause for rebuttal?
Danny, I didn't cut that off. The superintendent did. And for the last 6 months, we've been meeting before every school board meeting for an hour to hour and a half with MCEA. And there is a state law, and I don't know the KRS statute, but I can get it for you, that there's only three school districts in the state of Kentucky that negotiate, and they're actually breaking the law by doing that. There's state law, unless it's 100% participation, that you cannot negotiate with the school district.
Okay, let's move on. Even though this is another issue we could spend another couple of hours on, we'll move on to the issue of a particularly significant issue here in Kentucky. The outgoing Senator Bob Leeper has been a consistent supporter of nuclear power and lifting Kentucky's moratorium on nuclear power plants. Mr. Carroll, where do you stand on that?
I've had many conversations with Senator Leeper about this, and I think it's going to be an issue that we're going to see move forward in this state. I do believe that the moratorium will be lifted probably the next session. With our president's attack on our coal industry in the state, it's obviously had a major impact. More in the eastern part of the state than it has in our area. But nonetheless, the coal severance tax, which 50% of would go towards our general fund budget, it has had a major impact on us. And we've had to look at our energy sources being more inclusive. Obviously, coal is always going to be a major part of providing electricity in our state, but we're going to have to look to be more inclusive, look at green energy, natural gas, and I think the nuclear energy part of it has to come into play, and I think it is something that we have to consider. With all the issues that with the gaseous diffusion plant coming down and the uncertainty about the future of the laser technology plant that we believe is coming, I know that's been delayed to some extent. It is something we have the structure and the facility, the grounds, everything that would be needed for that facility, that type of facility. And I think it would be very beneficial to the people in our region and to our state. We are known in our state for having low power rates, and it's important that we keep that in order as another piece of the puzzle to attract additional business and industry to our state.
Thank you, Mr. Carroll. Mr. Parker, where do you stand on nuclear power and lifting Kentucky's moratorium on nuclear power plants?
I absolutely support lifting the nuclear moratorium on power plants here in Kentucky. I think that we have an excellent opportunity, and I will take that a step further. I think that we need to make sure that, the cleanup at the plant in Paducah is done only by local labor when at all possible. We need to protect those jobs. We also need to make sure that the tails that are sitting out there are not hauled out of state or they're kept here in state and hopefully locally to process those. I think that the war on coal is a disgrace. I think that coal keeps the lights on in Kentucky. Thousands of Kentuckians rely on fossil fuel for their families, and hopefully will be able to keep food on their tables through that. Gas in their cars, roofs over their heads. As state senator, I'll fight for those coal jobs. I know that we've had a big blow up in Paducah with switching Paducah Power to a plant up in Illinois and got away from using our local supplier, TVA. I think that's shame on us. I think we need to put the pressure on the board or the new board and the new people at Paducah Power to do something about that. And I think we need to buy local, and I think we need to support Shawnee Steam Plant.
We're running up on time, so we'll go straight to closing statements. And that is a one-minute closing statement. Mr. Carroll, you will start.
My opponent stated a little bit earlier, like he made a choice whether to run as a Democrat or Republican for this office. I changed to the Republican Party many years ago because of my conservative beliefs, especially my belief on right to life. And I believe in the principles of the Republican Party, the conservative values that are prevailing in our state Senate. And having met many of our state senators and spent time with them, very impressed with what I've seen and would be very honored to be a part of that group. They have become the watchdog for our state, and it's, you know, they've been able to control expenditures and carry the conservative values and try to keep our state in a position where we can move forward, where we can turn things around. We're not bonding our kids' futures away. We're not spending money we don't have, and I think that the state Senate has done the best they can to keep things in check. If the House turns this year, I think you're going to see some major things change in our state, and you're going to see some improvements. And again, I'm very proud of the record I have serving the people of McCracken County. My time in Marshall County, have a lot of family and friends in both counties, Carlisle, Ballard, and my goal is to serve the people equally. I have developed a lot of networks in the district and plan to be a representative of the people and make sure that that seat has been well served for 24 years by Senator Leeper, that strong leadership remains in that seat, someone who will fight for our people and make sure that we move forward as a district and move forward as a state.
Mr. Parker, your closing statement.
I look forward to serving the people of McCracken County, Marshall, Carlisle, and Ballard in the 2nd District. I did not think that I said I had a choice to run as Democrat or Republican. I've been a Democrat all my life. I've not switched parties. Like I said, this is my first time to run with an opponent. My opponent has ran 3 times in Marshall County in 2 different parties, so I don't have that type of experience. I'm a strong voice. I think I'm what they would call a moderately conservative Democrat, and I think there's a lot of those in Western Kentucky. I think I have good, rock-solid conservative values as far as business-wise. I'm a job creator, have been a job creator in small businesses. I know what it's like to make those payrolls. I know what it's like to pay the taxes. I have education experience through 7 years of McCracken County Board of Education. I'm a business owner. I'm very much 110% pro-life, and I'm a very strong supporter with an A rating of the Second Amendment and A rating through the NRA. I look forward to serving the people of Western Kentucky. Thank you.
You've been listening to one in a series of WKMS debates between the candidates asking for your vote this fall. Today we've been speaking with the candidates for Kentucky's 2nd District State Senate race, Republican Danny Carroll and Democrat Jeff Parker. Gentlemen, thanks for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.